It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast. Welcome, everybody. It is Tuesday, June 30th, 2020, which means it's time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 146 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. Bonded by our love of video games, your two hosts are myself, Maction, a tech enthusiast and occasional streamer, and my good friend, stand-up comedian, Mr. Lam Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. Our one-hour mission is to bring you news, history, issues, crowdfunding, trivia, and lawsuits that are important to video games. So, Mr. Nice Guy, I have just one question for you. How you doing, man?
Dude, I'm doing fantastic, man. Life is really, really good. How about you?
Oh, man, it's been a fun week. It really has. I think the most exciting thing is that by the time this show gets, you know, edited together and put up online on the 1st of July, that we will have the podcast awards are going to be open and they will be taking votes. So people can vote for us for a People's Choice Podcast Award in the subgenre of games and hobbies.
People can and people should, because you know what, Mac? We've been at it for a while. More importantly, we're unique, right? I don't think there's another podcast out there that's two good friends from the Couch Co-op era talking about video games from that perspective of people in their early to mid-30s, right? We're rocking this niche. This is us.
Absolutely, we are. And more importantly, unlike most shows that are, that are unscripted, we're unscripted, sure, but we're not unplanned. We actually have a direction that we go every episode, and I don't know many places that can claim that.
Well, Mac, you know what, man? I'm excited to really get into it today. Unless you got anything you want to share with the people. Past week, funny stories.
I can't say as I do. I think I'm just excited to get into the news and such today.
All right, well then let's do what we do best and hop right into the gaming news. Everybody who's here, thank you so much. This is episode 146 of Two Nerds in a Pod. So this first news story is from IGN.com. It's written by Matt Perslow. Nintendo has made a formal apology for Joy-Con drift issues frequently experienced with the Nintendo Switch's controllers, although it is unable to provide further comment due to the problem of being subject to a current class action lawsuit. I'll tell you why I'm laughing in a minute. But basically, here's the quote from Nintendo. Regarding the Joy-Con, we apologize for any troubles caused to our customers, said Shuntaro Furukawa, the company's president. We are continuing to aim to improve our products. But as the Joy-Con is the subject of a class action lawsuit in the United States, and this is still a pending issue, we would refrain from responding about any specific actions. So, Mac, number one, Joy-Con drift. Are people blowing this out of proportion? Because I experienced that on all of my consoles. And number two, why would you ever apologize during a lawsuit? Basically admitting wrongdoing. Please explain this to me.
I mean, it's not a great legal move, but I mean, it's a good PR move. I mean, all they've done is they've just apologized for it. They haven't put out any, like, you know, they haven't offered any remedies yet, have they?
Well, in the past they did. So I should have shared that. When this first started, they were offering free repairs. Mm-hmm. For this, which in my opinion is also kind of admitting wrongdoing. Like if they didn't believe they were wrong, they would have just said, hey, your Joy-Con broke, things break, sorry, buy a new one, right? But they were offering free repairs. And now they've come out and straight up apologized while they're in the middle of a lawsuit. To me, that's an admission of guilt. I don't know. That's just me.
Maybe they're thinking they can head it off in the pass by, you know, by having remedies already have been dispersed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that could be it.
But I don't know.
Now, the other question is this uncommon? Because on my Xbox One S, I experience drift with one of my controllers, and I haven't used it that hard. Do you ever experience that with any of your, like, PC controllers that you're using? Joy-Con drift, for lack of a better term, or joystick drift?
You know, not that I'm aware of. But because I use a controller so infrequently, I might just not have put enough hours on it to discover.
It could be. Now, Galvatron brings up something interesting. He says, I'm surprised at the Nintendo apology. First, they are not known for apologizing. Second, they are known for suing, and I don't see how they benefit legally from this apology. I agree. Like, I guess it's a good PR move, but from a company that I know and love, but maybe isn't necessarily the most PR friendly sometimes. This is a surprise. That's how I would how I'd put it. Now, Ishmopal says, I get mouse drift all the time. It's probably my slanted desk, though. That could be it. You should put a brick underneath your desk and hold it up even, so it's level. Anyway, moving on to our next news story. Mac, it's that time of year. I like to talk about deals during the news, right? And it's that time of year where gamers who have PCs can save all types of money during the Steam Summer Sale 2020. There's discounts on all kinds of games, and we're going to read just a few of the games that are on discount. Now, Mac, before I do that, anything on your wish list go on sale for this Steam Summer Sale?
Almost everything on my wish list has gone on sale.
Yeah, it's crazy because it's like you save money, but you can also go broke. So it's a time of self-control, y'all. Let me just tell you about some of the stuff that's on sale. Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain, $6. Now, it's been free before on PS Plus, but it's a killer game if you have not played it yet. Tabletop Simulator for all of you TTRPG players is $10 on sale. Mac, that's a good buy, don't you think?
Absolutely. Even if you don't use it for like a TTRPG, I mean, Ishmobile and I once played a game of, was it Zombicide, through Tabletop Simulator. So it's great for board games. And even more so now, in this day of social distancing and the like, you know, being able to play a board game that you love with people that hopefully you appreciate their company online is a very worthwhile purchase. So I would absolutely say get Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Any stuff that you're thinking of picking up besides that on this Steam Summer Sale? There's a lot, man.
Yeah, there are a lot of things I would enjoy picking up, but I think the problem that I keep coming back to is that my backlog is so big that I really feel like I need to get some of those taken care of before I purchase new ones.
Baby got backlog is what you're trying to say?
Baby got backlog.
Well, cool. Let's move on. Just so everyone knows, if anyone's thinking about getting into VR, there's a ton of VR stuff that's on sale. Fallout 4 VR, Skyrim VR, Pavlov, Contractors, believe Beat Saber. Actually, Beat Saber is not on sale, but there's a lot of VR stuff that's on sale. Mac, Half-Life Alyx is on sale for the first time for $45. And that's a killer deal because that game has not been on sale as of yet. So something to consider for those of you looking to save a little bit of money. Now let's talk a little bit about cheating online. Next news story comes from Rock Paper Shotgun. Now, Mac, we previously had talked about Valorant and its kernel level access. Could you refresh my memory on what it was you did not like about that?
Basically, kernel level access on a program means that it has access to files that you as a, you know, computer owner don't have access to. It's sure. Files that only the operating system should have access to.
Okay.
If a program already has kernel level access and it's not a malicious program, but somebody can get control of it through one means or another, then they've already gotten through any protection that your computer may have had. Especially the things like Valorant, if everybody's got this kernel level access built in, it makes sense for a hacker to specifically go after the anti-cheat program just because of how many people he knows. He's already got a fan base, as it were.
Okay, so here's a different approach that Valve is taking with Counter-Strike GO, which is a fantastic game. It's old, it's now free to play, but it has such a huge player base. Many, many people still play it. I enjoy playing it on occasion. Here's what they're doing, and this is once again Rock Paper Shotgun by Alice O'Connor. It says, Valve explained in Friday's announcement that this new anti-cheat feature significantly restricts the type of programs and files that can interact with the game. This doesn't only affect cheats, it blocks loads of harmless software too. In its initial state, folks have reported it objecting to software including Discord's overlay, some of Nvidia's Jazz antivirus, and the OBS video capture software. Sounds like some software developers will be able to make it comply with Valve's new rules. So it goes on to say that for now, the new measures are limited to a public beta branch for those who really want to try it. And it's only available to those who choose to opt in to this testing. No, Mac, this is a totally different way of doing it. It's not kernel level access, but number one, it's blocking a lot of programs that other people like to use while they are playing. The other thing is, well, I mean, that's the main thing. It's blocking your Discord. It's blocking your NVIDIA stuff. It's blocking all kinds of stuff. The other thing is you have to opt in. So, I mean, who's opting in to test anti-cheat software? not the people cheating. Am I wrong in this assumption, or is Valve just brilliant and I don't understand?
No,
Valve is brilliant. We agree that they are, but in this instance.
I mean, you're not wrong that it's not like any cheaters are probably opting into this, unless, of course, they're opting in as a sort of attempt to analyze what's going on or what could be coming in down the line. But as with any sort of alpha run or things like that, they're trying to work out and figure out the kinks.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me, because you'd think that maybe you'd even just test it privately. There's nothing that stops Valve from legally and ethically doing an update to the game that tests and tries to prevent anti-cheat software, especially if they put something in their terms of service that states that they may do that. So it's very interesting to me that they're only allowing certain people to, or rather that they're allowing people to pick and choose if they participate in this or not. So that's interesting to me. Not necessarily how I would do it, but better than kernel level access on the PC.
Agreed.
Last news story of the week comes from Tom's Guide, and this is about the Xbox Series S, as in Sam. Mac, the gist of this story is that there will be two different types of Xboxes launched at release. And I'll read a little bit about this to kind of explain it. So the Xbox Series S could match the Xbox Series X when it comes to CPU power at release. That's bad news for Sony and the PS5, but could be a big win for budget-conscious gamers. So Mac, here's the gist of it. The Xbox Series S will run on 7.5 gigabytes of RAM, which is about half of the 16 gigabytes of RAM that the Xbox Series X and PS5 will have. Additionally, it's capable of 1440 display, but that's a step down from the 4K max of the Series X. Still decent, though. So here's my question. You're not a console guy, and that's fine, but as a next-gen gamer, are you going to buy something that's watered down? Something that is basically just a half step above what we have now? I don't understand this segmentation of consoles.
That's not a loaded question at all. I mean,
how is it loaded?
Are you gonna settle for a watered down console? Are you gonna go for only something that's half a step above?
Okay. So let me rephrase
no.
it.
No, are, no, no, no. It's great. I'll take the question as is. I'm probably not going to go for any of the consoles, but the next time that I do an upgrade to my system, to my computer or otherwise, I'm going to try and pick something middle to upper range of what's available so that I can run most everything on it for the next several years, but I won't go for any crazy top tier, top of the line things. I'll go for something.
Really?
Yeah, I always go for stuff that's like in the upper thing, but it's mostly like for example, there's going to be a new RAM standard out.
Yep.
I will absolutely be purchasing a new motherboard that has, you know, that works with that new RAM standard. And I will also try and purchase with what I think is a reasonable amount, but I won't go for the top of the line stuff. I try and go for something middle of the road, but newer, and then kind of piecemeal upgrade as I can, just so I can keep things within the same, shall we say, generational ecosystem and make incremental improvements.
Let me ask you this, because the upgrades you're talking about making on your PC are pretty significant, right? You're not just adding some RAM. You know, you're not just, you know, upgrading colors, RGBs. You're getting a new motherboard and probably new RAM as well, which is, you know, significantly pricey. How often do you do this? That's my question for you. Is it every 5 years, every 10 years? Is it as needed? How often are you making these types of upgrades?
As needed on the individual upgrades, and maybe 5 to 7 years on the full bump ups. I mean, I might have put this computer together more recently than that, but I mean, I want to say I've had this current setup for about 5 years. And the last thing I upgraded was the video card. Right when we started getting video cards that were VR ready, I picked up one, and I've just been rocking it.
So the reason I ask is because I was curious. And first of all, can we give a shout out to Moocher real quick in the chat? He says that it's his 13th wedding anniversary. Moocher is here hanging out with us every single week watching the show. Congratulations, Moocher, on 13 years of marriage. That's pretty awesome, right, Mac?
Yeah, congratulations. And what are you doing here?
Oh, yeah, man.
Just stopping by. I see.
The reason I asked how often you upgrade is I was curious if it's more frequently than new consoles come out. Because to me, when a new console comes out, I'm not saying you have to get the biggest and the best, but to have one that is, in my opinion, half-baked doesn't make sense. And here's the reason why. Xbox has made it clear that they're all about letting people play wherever they want, so much so that the new Halo will be able to be played on the current gen of consoles. And then if you later upgrade to a Series X, you can get it on there. So I guess I don't know why most people would purchase a Series S when they could just buy an Xbox One S, you know, or keep their existing one. Like, why take the half-step upgrade when you could just wait and save and maybe get the Series X in a couple years when it makes sense? Now, Ishmobile asked an interesting question. He said, what if they sold it for $200 less? It's a valid point. Let's say the Series X is $500, the Series S is $300. To me, it still doesn't make sense. Just hold off because your exclusives can still be played on the previous gen hardware. If somebody doesn't have an Xbox at all and they want to get into this, they could buy a Series S, enjoy that, and hold off on the... Excuse me, buy a One S. See, these are so confusing names, Mac. There's too many Xboxes. They could buy the current gen stuff and hold off until they can really afford the top tier next gen stuff. That's my stance on it. Mac, that's been our news, man.
All right. Well, then in that case, let's take a little look into the past with some video game history. Friends, this week has been a fantastic week in history. For starters, 1998 this week, we saw the release of Banjo-Kazooie for the N64. Another fantastic title from the team over at Rare. As a matter of fact, I think I was watching a video as somebody speculated about a Nintendo 64, an N64 Mini, and what they said was that it's unlikely that if Nintendo made an N64 Mini, that it would sell very well. Because
really?
And they said because a lot of the games that made the Nintendo 64 so desirable were by Rare and third parties to which they would not have the licensing necessarily locked down. So
That's true.
So, and we saw it with the Super Nintendo that there were some games that for licensing issues they couldn't put on the SNES Classic. And so in that, what I'm just saying is that Rare does a fantastic job. So much of what made the Nintendo 64 awesome were games from Rare, and Banjo-Kazooie's no different. Let's see here, what else? In 2003, we actually had an interesting... I was debating about talking about this for Legalese, but I decided there wasn't quite enough there. Back in 2003, Activision had a 10-year exclusive deal to produce Star Trek video games. And they sued Viacom, who was then in charge of the licensing of the Star Trek franchise. But they sued them because they were like, hey, Viacom's neglecting the franchise of Star Trek. And as such, our 10-year exclusive deal is losing value. So they're stiffing us, essentially, by screwing up the Star Trek franchise. And I'm, for one, very inclined to agree with Activision's assessment, but they settled out of court, so it wasn't, you know, so there was no real fun precedent or anything, just a sort of interesting, hey guys, we would be making more money in video games if not for you screwing up Star Trek. And you know me, anytime I can talk Star Trek, it's worthwhile.
I knew you just shoehorned that in, man, just so you could talk about...
Just so I could talk Trek. Talking Trek here. But the main event, released in 2000, Diablo 2. I mean, where even to begin? Diablo 2 brought amazing depth in that game. Crafting, the ability to design characters and put them in such interesting ways. You could have, like, melee-based spellcasters. And I mean, like, the atmosphere in that game was phenomenal. In spite of graphics that are, you know, okay, right? I mean, by today's standards, the moodiness, the lighting, the sound, the music, the score, the sound effects, everything about Diablo 2 was just delightful. But I do think where it really shines and where Diablo 2 left an indelible mark on video game history is certainly in the concept of skill trees. So, as a concept, skill trees, you know, where you have more or less a tree, for lack of a better term, where your skills, as you progressed along, you could go different paths and strengthen your character within a video game RPG. Skill trees really became popular with Diablo 2 and so many games afterwards, so many RPGs afterward, still use the same principles that were pioneered in the Diablo 2 skill tree systems. You know, for those of you who are big fans of Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy X's spear grid system, 100% a skill tree, just ever so slightly tweaked. It's just fantastic. And while there arguably are certain ways in which tabletop RPGs did skill trees before, they didn't do it quite as well as Diablo 2. And also, it wasn't done quite as frequently until after Diablo 2. The folks at Blizzard, they showed us the way with Diablo 2, and we are still, in a lot of ways, treading that same ground. Because, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But, oh man, Diablo 2. Wonderful game. Rolf says Diablo 2 was a great game. I still have it, even though my discs are broken.
Now, that's interesting. I gotta know, like, if the discs are broken, like, are they snapped? Are they cracked? And you still have them? That's dedication. You know what I mean?
I can see in my mind's eye, I'm going over there to Germany, and there's a shadow box on the wall with little pieces of Diablo 2 held up there. In my head, that's the visual I get. Rolf, I hope you'll correct any misunderstandings I have of it.
Respect, Ralph, for keeping that game.
Mad respect. But yeah, that's just a little bit of video game history. Diablo 2, if you haven't before, you ought to play it. It's almost gaming perfection.
Really? See, and I didn't even know this, so I'm really glad I heard about this today. I wonder if it's part of the Steam sale. I'll have to look into it and see. Cool. Well, now it's time for our topic of the week, a segment where we talk about something relevant in gaming, one of the biggest stories in gaming, and give our opinions on it. Mac, we're going to talk about virtual reality today.
Oh.
We are going to talk about VR and how accessible it can become. And the reason why is because one of the biggest PS4 exclusives this year is getting a VR update in July. It's a game called Dreams, and I will just give you the rundown of what it's about. Mac, it's basically a game that allows you to make other games. It's community driven. So, I mean, someone has created, I believe, like a Metal Gear Solid remake, you know, like a remake of the first level of Metal Gear Solid in 3D, Super Mario. You know, people really can just take the tools within the game and create whatever they want. It's been out a little bit, and now it is getting that VR update in July. And so my question for you is, as more and more exclusives, you know, quote unquote, AAA or AA games start to get VR access, combined with the fact that the PlayStation can get you a VR headset for a couple $100s, do you think that the percentage of households that have VR will increase to, let's say, 50% next gen? Do you think we'll see that many people with VR headsets?
50% seems like a big ask for something like a VR, but I do think that it will definitely increase. The more systems that incorporate VR, and the more that people have an option of getting in with either minimal or decreased overhead, the better. And do keep in mind that until video game consoles have good, solid, packaged VR, the only option is a computer that will do VR. And that's easier said than done. There are certain requirements in order to make sure a game will play. And if it's going to play on VR, you're going to want to play at a certain quality. You don't want potato VR, is what I'm getting at.
Exactly.
So
now here's the thing. So Valve is one of them. We've talked about Valve a lot, and I really love Valve. Number one, they're from my hometown, Bellevue, Washington. Number two, they just put out really, really good games. When they put out games, that is, Valve, I'm looking at you, ready for that Portal 3, that Half-Life 3, that Left 4 Dead 3, we're waiting. They are one of the most bold companies in the industry, in my opinion, because they took a franchise that so many people have been waiting for, and they had the audacity, they had the gall, Mac, to put it out in VR. And to me, that says something. To me, that says that they really believe that VR is the way of the future. Because right now, the number of people who could experience Half-Life Alyx is very, very small. And you're right, it's due to that barrier of entry of having a gaming PC and then also being willing to purchase and able to purchase a VR headset. And so I think that Valve is visionary. I think that indicates to me that moves are going to be made next gen to make VR more widely accessible so that people can experience that. Because Half-Life is a pretty iconic franchise, right? I mean, I can't believe that their end goal was to put it out on VR and only have, you know, what, 2% of the gaming industry be able to experience it? I just can't believe that.
And maybe they are a visionary. Maybe what they were going for was trying to find a way to make a more immersive experience for VR, and Half-Life was kind of the way that they did that. Not so much that it came, shall we say, game first, you know? It wasn't a game first consideration. What if it was a hardware first consideration and then they decided to slap a coat of Half-Life paint on it? You know what I'm saying?
You think so?
I don't know. I don't have VR. I haven't been able to play Alyx, so I don't know how intensely connected the ideas are.
The other thing is, though, Phil Spencer has actively said that Xbox will not release one at release, will not release a headset. So I think that on Sony's end, I think that more and more people will buy VR this year, or rather this gen, than they did past gen, simply because they're putting more and more experiences on it. It's affordable. The barrier for entry is reasonable. And then, you know, I think that PC gamers who have a PC but maybe weren't interested in VR in the past will probably adopt it because Half-Life Alyx is there. You can play, you know, Skyrim. You can play ports of other games. And additionally, there's mods that allow you to play basically any PC game in VR. So I think it's going to become a bigger and bigger thing. And I'm excited to see what way the industry goes in the next 5 years.
Yeah, same here. It would be nice to have an easy entry into VR for people.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, that has been the topic of the week.
All right. Well, now let's turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart, and I will go ahead and post a link in the chat for those of you who are here with us live so that you can take a look and, well, you know how we like to do. We'll ask you whether you think it should be kicked out of here or kickstarted. And there is the link. It is called X-Zodiac is the name of the project. Now, some important things to note right off the bat, they have already met their goal. They still have another 22 days left to go, so now they're just blowing through it. Originally, an approximately $25,000 goal, and they're way past it already. A $13 buy-in for a digital copy to be released sometime around the neighborhood of February 2021. It's not a fancy Kickstarter, in the note that it doesn't have tons of those graphics and arts assets like a stretch goal board, but you know, it doesn't really need that, because the work kind of speaks for itself. It's got a single dev and a single musician, and Pixel Jam is helping with the publishing, so it's a pretty small-scale project going on. But you know me, of course, I feel like everything should have a playable demo, and this does. But X-Zodiac is, in a lot of ways, it's basically like Star Fox.
Yeah.
I'm sure by now you've had a chance to go ahead and watch the video that accompanies in it, but yeah, this guy from London, this Ben Hickling, has captured a lot of the essence of Star Fox from our youths. So what you thinking, Mr. Nice Guy?
I mean, I guess it's frustrating because... and once again, we always want to see people succeed, but why would I want to play this? In 2020, I like nostalgia as much as the next guy in their 30s, guy or girl in their 30s, but I don't want to play this. If I want to play this, I'll play Star Fox. Like, this is literally on SNES Classic. This, I believe, Star Fox 2 is on... it's on the SNES Classic. I believe it's on Nintendo Switch Online as well. I don't know why I would have any desire to play this, and I don't know how to explain it better than that. It's kind of a ripoff of Star Fox.
So, okay, where's the line between homage, tribute, and ripoff? But this is definitely on the ripoff side for you.
It is, and the line is new ideas, right? Mm. Is Celeste a homage to, 8-bit and 16-bit games? Yes. Is The Messenger? Absolutely. But it has enough modern stuff in it to keep it fresh, if that makes sense. So, the dialogue that existed in The Messenger, for example, is not the type of dialogue that you would have gotten in a traditional 16-bit game. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if it's updated for modern day. It's a lot more punchy, and by punchy, I mean comedic. The whole premise of doing a Metroidvania and then being able to switch between 8-bit and 16-bit is something that set it apart. So even though it's a homage, it's different. Celeste, a homage to classic platformers, right? But it's different. It even goes so far as to have some throwbacks and some Easter eggs in reference to them. But there's an outlying story, the premise of climbing a mountain. There's characters that are likable. It's something that's different. And to me, this just looks like Star Fox modern day.
Okay. So it just doesn't bring new things to the table.
That's correct. Now, what consoles is this available for?
PC at the moment is what it's being developed for Steam. Now I will say that that I feel kind of like a comment from in the chat from Ish Mobile that not many teams do retro low polygon style stuff, and it's true. We've seen a couple of people try to do Kickstarters for PS1 style, but this is definitely not a lot of people are going for this aesthetic. But I think I can understand where you're coming from with regards to it doesn't bring any new ideas, but I don't know. I feel sufficiently charmed by it, and the demo plays nicely. So, and it kind of feels the way it was. And while I liked Star Fox, there wasn't much to go on with Star Fox. You played through it, it was done. Even Star Fox 2, the version that we got with the release of the SNES Classic, and that I assume is the same one available with the whole on the Switch store, is kind of slow in a lot of parts. This does bring, or at least try to bring, some new things, because it's supposed to have multiple routes and paths on the game and 12 levels. So, I can agree with you saying that it's more of the same and kind of a bit of a ripoff. I can see where you're coming from, but I feel like the type of content that it's going to bring is going to be more of the same in the good way, more of the same. If you wanted more Star Fox, here's more Star Fox. But if it's not for you, it's not for you, and that's totally cool, and it appears as though you are in good company. I don't want to belabor a point. I think we know enough now about X-Zodiac to give our deliberation, and we encourage you all to do so in the chat with us now. Mr. Nice Guy, you say...
I say kick. I wish that they would have added something to make this more unique. A hook, right? Mm-hmm. Like procedurally generated, or make it roguelite somehow. Like, make it so that as you're going through the game, you get different upgrades, and if you die, you got to start over and you lose those upgrades, but you keep some of the permanent ones. Like, give me something that sets it apart so that it doesn't just look like a literal Star Fox clone.
I think that would be very fair, and who knows, maybe we might get something like that. I've had plenty of Kickstarters have, when they've gotten enough money, they've added things like a procedural generation or randomizer modes. And if you guys are interested in seeing some more, I do know that the dev, this Ben Hickling, at 4 p.m. Eastern, is going to be doing a live stream of some development of it. And who knows, maybe if we've got the time, maybe I might pop in there and take some of Mr. Nice Guy's notes. For me, I say kickstart. And for those of you here in the chat, let us know what you think. I do believe we're looking at a kick from Spenis and such. So we'll tabulate the results from here, but kick or kick start, we'll see where this one lands.
All right. Well, now it is time for a segment called Nerd Flex. Woo-hoo. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host with trivia questions that we almost never get wrong. And I use a different introduction each week for this segment. So if you have trivia questions for us this week, please type them in the chat. Mac, can you keep me up to date if people type in the chat? I just don't have it pulled up right now.
Absolutely.
But to start off, I do have one of our banked questions that was sent to us. And this one deals with The Legend of Zelda, a series that we are both familiar with. Here's the question. What is the name of the dungeon in Ocarina of Time that takes place in a creature's belly?
The dungeon? It would have been Jabu, right? Jabu?
I believe that is absolutely right. That's what I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, pretty confident that we're talking Jabu. Jabu Jabu's belly, or maybe inside Jabu Jabu, but you know.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's Jabu Jabu, and I haven't gotten the answer pulled up yet, I think that that's a reasonable answer.
Yeah, I think so too.
So let's see what it says. It's Jabu Jabu. That is absolutely right.
Nice. Not so bad, Mr. Nice Guy. 1-3. We'll see if we can go 2-3. And again, those of you who are here with us live, get those questions in the chat. We will take them first come, first served.
That's exactly right. So one more question. And Mac, this is one that you're going to have to lean on me for, because I know you don't play these games. But it's a Rockstar question. In Vice City, what film is Ricardo Diaz's mansion a replica of?
Well, I'm just going to throw out there that with a name like Ricardo Diaz, I'm going to say Scarface, but because I know there was a mansion in Scarface, and I know that I don't remember the name of the... Anyway, point being is that I would say Scarface, just, you know, kind of shot from the hip, but I'm going to lean on you.
That's what I was going to say. It was going to be either Scarface or Godfather. And I don't know if there's a mansion. I honestly haven't really seen those movies, so I don't know if there's a mansion in Godfather, but just from what I know of Grand Theft Auto and it being a very, like, a gangster, mafia-based game, especially Vice City, those were going to be my two guesses. And since there was one that was in common with what you said, I am going to go with Scarface.
All right, let's see.
And it was The Godfather. Just kidding. Oh. It was Scarface.
Oh, you had me. You almost had me there.
It was legit Scarface. So, and I feel like that was kind of easy because I feel like there's only a certain number of movies that would be based on, or that GTA would base a mansion on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. There's only a certain number of iconic mansions that have underworld connections, you know?
That's exactly it. Well, cool. Let's keep it moving. We'll do one more question and then we'll keep it moving to our next segment. So here is the next question. What is the name of, and I'm so bad with Roman numerals, I believe this is Final Fantasy VII's Sephiroth's sword. I'm going to lean on you for this because I know nothing about that.
Sure, but I mean, like, Final Fantasy VII is the... I tried to block that out of my mind memory. I honestly don't know. I feel like the name of the song that was Sephiroth's theme was, like, One Winged Angel. So I am willing to bet that... And I don't know why I know that, I just know it. But I'm willing to bet that it's, like, whatever the Japanese is for One Winged Angel or something like that. Not that we're going to hear what that is. I don't know. We're going to have to take the L on this one, I think.
I think so. All right, well, let's just look at the answer. So the answer for this one is... I've never heard of this. Masamune.
Oh, Masamune? Is that what Sephiroth's... So, like, Masamune is, like, a legendary sword, right? It's okay. Kind of like Excalibur, but, you know, but different things. Anyway, there's a Masamune in almost any Final Fantasy or many JRPG games, there will be a Masamune, and it's usually a pretty awesome sword. So yeah, I'm very surprised by that. I should have guessed that, but I never would have, because I just wouldn't have pegged that for being his sword. Wow. Okay, you learn something new every day on Nerdflex.
Well, next week, hit us up with those questions, see if you can stump us, and we'll take it from there next time.
Yeah, 2 for 3 is not bad, and so with that in mind, it's time that we move on over into legalese.
Legalese.
Let's talk about a little something interesting legally that impacts your video gaming. What we're going to do is we're going to do something thematically for the month of July, and I know it's still June, but we're getting an early jump on it. We're going to talk about the idea in video games of how real is too real.
Interesting.
Oh, well, thanks. We're going to cover a bunch of things, but what I want to talk about first is locations, right? So I think it has been kind of a desire of almost anybody to build things in a game that exist IRL, right?
Sure.
So much of what people try to do is people try to like model that. We've seen people trying to model their own cities in Minecraft. I know myself, when I had some time on my hands, I tried to build a Left 4 Dead custom campaign centered around the local university, and I got a pretty reasonable way through it. I eventually decided not to go for that because of a variety of reasons, including but not limited to the fact that that there is a little bit of legal hoopla surrounding real life locations. So we're going to talk about the one that comes to us from the 2006 game Resistance: Fall of Man. So when they released it back in 2006, there was a little bit of frustration because they used images of a cathedral of the Church of England, and essentially they 3D modeled Manchester Cathedral and put that into the game. The church did not take too kindly to that, and there was a bit of back and forth. Like, for example, they were like, hey, we don't want you... We're trying to reduce gun crime in this. What are you doing making people live out their fantasies in a cherished cathedral? And Sony, of course, was like... They responded by saying, hey, it's a video game, it's not reality, and we got the permissions that we needed to. They responded by saying, hey... Is this that much different than having scenes for a television program shot in the place? I mean, is that much different? For all of this, there was some back and forth, and what they said was they came down by saying, hey, you're not in violation of any copyright that's going on with this church. But it's still in there for the most part to this day if you're playing a copy of it. So can you use an IRL location in your video games? Yes. Can you do it with a first-person shooter? Yeah, for the most part. And at least that's where we sat in 2006. We're going to be revisiting this exact topic in light of some things that came on farther down the road, but this is just kind of the first big challenge that we had was there in that 2006 game, Resistance: Fall of Man.
Nice. Now, I mean, The Last of Us Part 2 definitely takes place in Seattle, and I was impressed enough as I've played it that some of the locations are like pretty darn close to the way that it looks in Seattle. So, I mean, you can use a location. It's just a matter of if it's a location that requires permission. Is that what I'm understanding, Mac?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's so many lawsuits like this. Remember the one about the tattoos on NBA players in NBA 2K?
Absolutely, and that's one of the things we're going to come and do a thing on later. You're stealing my thunder, Mr. Nice Guy.
Oh, sorry, man. We won't get into that.
But no, there's so many lawsuits, and the interesting thing is, can you use IRL locations? Yeah, maybe, but I mean, also don't forget that, like, the Eiffel Tower, right? The Eiffel Tower at night you can't use the Eiffel Tower at night for anything. It is copy and protected by the government of France. So, I mean, sure, do you want to use do you want to use this cathedral in Manchester? Okay, that's fine. Do you want to use the Eiffel Tower at night? Oh, no, 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 no. No depiction of that, Stella. It's kind of bonkers some ways how this goes one way or the other sometimes, but we're gonna try and cover as much of these questions about how real is too real through the month of July.
Well, thank you everybody so much for tuning in. That has been our show, but before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool nerdy stuff that we have been into on Xbox, on PS4, on mobile, on PC, hashtag PC Master Race, and everywhere else under the video game sun. Also, we're going to talk about the stuff we've been watching on YouTube, on Netflix, on Hulu, all those places. Mac, do you want to lead off, and people in the chat, let us know what you've been into as well?
Absolutely. So I've been watching DuckTales. I've been also watching Avatar The Last Airbender. The missus and I have been watching The Office again. We've just been getting through it. She only ever made it to like season 6.
What?
And so, yeah, I know. So we're actually going through now the episodes that she's never seen. And that's about it for watching. As for what I've been playing, played some more Master Chief Collection, almost done with Halo 2, been playing it co-op with a friend. And that's about all that I've had the time to play from video game standpoint, although definitely going to be doing some tabletop RPGs. Had a fun one on Sunday, played this one-shot set in the Firefly-verse, and it was pretty fun. It didn't go quite the way I expected, but I think everybody had themselves an okay time. So what about you?
Man, what have I been into? So obviously The Last of Us Part 2, and I mean, before next week's pod, I will have definitely wrapped that up. I actually really would like to talk about it, but I don't want to spoil it for people. I'm not that guy, you know what I mean? But it's, in my opinion, so far, it's exactly what you'd expect, and I'll leave it at that. As far as what else I've been playing, Valorant, I've been getting back into that. I have not done the competitive yet. I've mostly been doing the Spike Rush casual mode, but having a blast with that. Your boy's putting in work. Expect some clips on my Twitter real soon, at Nice Guy Gaming on Twitter. And as far as what I've been watching, Mac, I haven't had a lot of time for TV because I've been doing mostly the gaming thing. But my wife and I are still watching through the Hunger Games again, so we just watched The Mockingjay Part 1 on Saturday for our date night. And I've been watching some old Scrubs clips on YouTube. Scrubs was such a good show, and it's not streaming anywhere, so I just have to watch funny clips on YouTube and laugh. So that's what I've been into.
Gotcha. You know, we need to find a DVD of Scrubs for you.
A digital video disc. We do. We do need to find that.
Absolutely. Well, as for our fine friends here with us live, we've got a recommendation for, an anti-recommendation for The Boys Season 1, a recommendation for The People versus O.J. Simpson. Game of Thrones Season 8 is apparently bad, but it doesn't damage the entire series. I think there are plenty of people who would disagree with that. Terminator 1 and 2, however, classics with good old Michael Biehn, 80s action hero extraordinaire. Let's see, Path of Exile is a good game from Rolf, and Sims 4, and as always, Slay the Spire. So, that's good. Ishmobile does recommend Catastrophe, Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, and he's been, as opposed to playing, he's been watching Last of Us Part 2, but playing GURPS with us, of course, and a little Spelunky. That's a good, awesome, solid title.
It's a good game. Love some Spelunky. Well, cool. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Mech, do we not need to give another reminder about how to vote for the podcast awards, or are we just going to tweet that out?
You know what? We're going to tweet it out, but it's worth throwing a quick one in here. Oh, and Galvatron, thanks for those playing. Sorry, we're getting to it a little late. But there'll be a link. It'll be the podcast awards. We are in Games and Hobbies for that People's Choice Podcast Awards. And you'll just need to vote for us. Which should be good. There are also a couple of other fantastic podcasts to do so. For example,
No, there's not.
Oh, no,
just
not
us.
Not in our same category, but in different okay. categories. That's right.
Okay.
So, like, Service Desk, right? That's one that's going to be in technology. That's to vote for. Yeah.
Shout out to Mets Girl.
Indeed. So, so there's some good ones to pick, but just so long as Two Nerds in a Pod is your pick for games and hobbies, we are thrilled.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in. Y'all really are the best viewers on Twitch. If you're here live, stick around for a quick post show. And everyone else, please tune in next week, twitch.tv/twonerdsinapod on Tuesday, 9 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Mountain Time. Keep it nerdy, y'all. Deuces.
See ya.